Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Fremantle Press podcast. I'm Claire Miller and it is my great pleasure to introduce Maria Pappas. Maria's novel, I Belong to the Lake, is one of three unpublished manuscripts in the running to win the 2020 City of Fremantle Hungerford Award. If she wins, she'll secure herself a publishing contract with Fremantle Press and a $15,000 cash prize from the City of Fremantle. Maria's stories and essays have appeared in a number of Australian and international journals, including Griffith Review, Axon Journal, The Letters Page, The West Australian, SBS Online, and Review of Australian Fiction. In 2011, her play Arbor Day won the Madge Monologues competition, and she's recently completed a PhD at the University of Western Australia. Welcome, Maria.
Hi, thank you.
Can you describe for us the manuscript in your own words?
Okay, so my manuscript, I Belong to the Lake, explores what it is like to witness a serious and frightening illness, particularly childhood leukemia, in a loved one and especially in a sibling. So young kids seeing their brothers and sisters go through this. So on one level, my narrative centres around a young girl, her name is Grace, as she witnesses her sister Emma's illness, as well as her parents' struggles with the illness, with their relationship, the displacement that the girls and the families experience, the separation of family throughout and beyond Emma's treatment. So in my manuscript, the girls live in a country town, and in WA, you can't get treated for childhood leukemia in your country town. You must leave home and you must come to the city. So it deals with that displacement. On another level, the narrative skips forward and imagines Grace as an adult, as a pediatric oncology nurse, in fact, who ends up resuffering the memory of her childhood in response to a present emergency at the hospital. And in amongst all of this again, Grace has a childhood friend, a kind of a crush, a boy that she had met in the hospital while her sister was being treated, who also shares the experience of being a sibling of another child with cancer. And the whole novel really centres around what it is like to watch without being able to help, what happens to the siblings, how are they impacted growing up. And I basically asked myself all the way through, can someone like Grace or her friend Nate, her crush Nate, ever really come to terms with or ever really fully recognise what it was that they went through or what it was that their siblings went through?
Why this story?
In our family, we had had very intimate experience with watching loved ones be treated for cancer, and I wanted to write about pediatric cancer in a way that honoured the very fragmented and often disorientating nature in which such an experience is commonly lived and processed. And unfortunately for me, in literature or in cinema, I often saw cancer represented as that disruption to a character's norm. So everything is going along really, really well. Then cancer comes along and it's trouble in a narrative. And so then what happens is that the characters need to overcome that trouble, or there's some kind of an event that pushes a character towards a deeper meaning or purpose. Having had lived experience, I found it very hard to comprehend such a neat trajectory. I rarely finished books that had that trajectory, and I really felt like someone had to write what it was like. And in fact, the more people that write what it is like, the greater we understand illnesses like this or traumatic experiences like this in the way that they are lived rather than the way they are often told. And so I aim just to really explore the illness, explore children experiencing the illness. I didn't want to see the illness as a plot point, but just as something that affects individuals in very unique ways. And so then I think my narrative is very, very character-based. What happens to these particular siblings? How will they retain a sense of wonder, the siblings and the children within the hospital, even in the midst of such heavy hospital treatment? And can families impacted ever leave that shock or trauma behind?
It's really interesting, the idea of the neat little packaged up narrative, and interesting to hear how that affects people who have been through experiences of cancer, how that affects them to watch that as well. So it's a really lovely idea to show it in a slightly different way.
Oh, thank you.
How long have you been working on it?
When you asked me to think about this question before, I wrote how long is a long time. Most of the novel was written 2013 until 2017, and it did form part of a PhD thesis. It wasn't what I initially was going to study, but then it became my PhD. So I'd say 4 to 5 years working on the actual novel, but much more than that, not writing, researching the ways in which narratives of illness or trauma are most commonly told, and not just narratives of cancer, but also other traumatic narratives. I could see lots of commonalities between them. And between that research, and I had to do two types of writing, one creative and one analytical, I think I spent nearly 8 years trying to understand for myself how it was that I wanted to represent and structure the experience. And often when I was doing the PhD, I didn't know how to finish it, didn't know how to finish my narrative. And when I understood that for a lot of people who have had trauma, it's very hard to see an end, then I knew how to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to talk about The Hungerford now,
yeah,
because this isn't the first time you've been on the shortlist.
No.
This is the second time.
Yeah.
So, A, tell us about that first time. I think it was before my time. And
yeah.
B, this is a double barrel question, sorry. And B, tell us what it feels like to be on the shortlist.
So I was shortlisted in 2010, actually, for my master's thesis. My master's thesis explored place, and I guess this thesis in a way explores what it is to feel out of place. So the opposite, really. It was a really lovely experience, and I did attempt to have the novel sent out for publication, but because it was part of my master's thesis, it was quite short, and publishers said it needed a little bit more to be marketable. And when I thought about, did I want to make it marketable or did I want to learn some more, I thought, actually, I still feel like I've got a lot to learn. And that's when I started my PhD. This time around, it had been finished actually a couple of years. I could have handed it in 2 years ago, to be honest, but I didn't feel confident in my narrative. And so I just kept on finishing my PhD and doing all the other things that I was doing. And then right at the very last minute, I decided maybe I'll hand it in this time around. And there was about 20 minutes left of the deadline. And I thought, well, here goes, that must be a sign. So then I just put it in and thought nothing of it. And then suddenly it's shortlisted. You know, you write, you write, you write. And sometimes you write whole things. And I know that my previous novel hasn't been published. So who do I write for? Am I writing for myself? Am I writing for someone else? Am I writing for one specific family member or a couple of family members? But what's nice about it this time around is that I've tried to do something different and my thinking is validated. It wasn't just validated by the university as significant knowledge. It's validated as actually something that could possibly be interesting to many readers. And I teach, and I'd like to be able to say to my students, stay committed, keep learning. And if at first you don't succeed, maybe another time might be useful, maybe, maybe not, but keep going.
That's brilliant advice. And for us, this year's very special because it's the 30th anniversary of the Hungerford Award, and it's discovered many lovely writers over the years. Tell us about who has inspired you particularly.
Absolutely. I will say the very early winners, Brenda Walker and Gail Jones. And the reason why I say that is because many years ago, my younger sister was studying literature at UWA with Brenda and Gail. And I was doing something else completely. I was working in finance, and I used to go down to the uni to collect her sometimes, and I would sneak into their classes and just watch their lectures, and they were so inspiring. The very first Hungerford books that you published, I read and made me want to write, and made me want to write in a literary form, made me want to experiment and try new things. And yeah.
Well, let's talk about your novel, or let's hear about your novel.
This book follows the trajectory of two siblings, each of whom had siblings with cancer, and they've gone their separate paths and then they've remet by chance. And so that's the part that I'm going to read. For a long time, we were just friends. That's what we were. But then one thing happened and then another. And then before I knew it, he was at my door ringing the bell while slipping his wedding ring into the bottom of the grey satchel he always carried. It would stop me in my tracks, the action of him pulling at his finger and then fumbling with the bag, me on one side of the door and him on the other, both clear as day and obscured through the frosted glass. And yet I would let him in, the bag rattling with keys and coins and that one piece of gold. And as we made our way through my house, I would simply take the bag, put it in the hallway closet, and pretend it didn't exist. Nate knew cancer like I knew cancer. We were both from cancer. We shared it like a password between travellers in a foreign country. Or that moment in a crowd when someone says something or another and they carry just the right inflection, an accent you recognise, the sound of home. That's what it was like between him and me. He knew where I had come from. He remembered having first spoken to me, not at the lake, like I had thought, but in the harsh light of a hospital waiting room all those years ago. In other circumstances, he might have been in my class at school, just as easily the boy who won all the cross-country races as the one who hid cigarettes beneath the railing of the drinks trough. He could have been anyone with any skill whatsoever, a maths whiz, a budding scientist, a bookworm. But at the lake where I first came to know him and at the hospital where he insisted he met me, we were made the same, without distinction. Mine, Nate said, was a hollow face that would scan and forget him just as quickly as I took him in. It was a cloudy face, reminiscent of the face he also once wore. Nate knew the patterns of the linoleum floor in the hospital as if they were landmarks in his hometown. He memorised the dinner menu, the nurses' names, the medicines which were fed through clear plastic tubes, the channels on the televisions above. We were extras, he and I, but also fixtures. We stood on the other side of closed green doors, in corners of busy rooms, and at the edges of small porcelain basins where we diligently scrubbed antibacterial gel onto our palms and over our fingers until the skin on our knuckles began to crack. All the while we watched our siblings, what they were going through, where they were hurting, and how their throats seemed made of the same tiny rips and tears and broken lines that had appeared on our skin. We poured more of the gel on, kept quiet, and washed and washed and washed, both of us, him with David and me with Emma, washing our hands, occupying those old hores like the peeling plaster that often fell in flakes to the floor, scrubbing back, scrubbing until it stung. Nate stopped touching the bin, the elevator buttons, toilet doors, toilet seats. We were the siblings, the sidelines, farmed out and left behind, old enough to fend for ourselves, too young to understand. I was 13 then, and Emma was 4. Nate was my age, but his brother was older, 16, and supposedly stronger. We were we. After I found him again, when I was with him, when we lay together in bed, when we whispered and listened to each other speak and not speak, we were we. We understood, we heard, we knew. And then, when he inevitably returned to his wife, I became I once more.
That was Maria Pappas reading from I Belong to the Lake. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
And good luck on the 22nd.
It was lovely to be here today. Thanks for letting me read.
Maria is one of three writers shortlisted for the 2020 City of Fremantle Hungerford Award. This year we're celebrating the Hungerford's 30th anniversary and the winner will be announced on Thursday the 22nd of October at Fremantle Arts Centre. Tickets are available from fremantlepress.com.au, so please join us. And for more great interviews with authors and industry insiders, subscribe to the Fremantle Press podcast on your favourite podcast app.